Today we're joined by a couple of incredible leaders from the Solomon Foundation as we talk about designing multi-use buildings and a creative way of getting into a building and intentionally sharing space with other businesses or organizations. Raleigh Hutton needs no introduction as a former Nexus staff member, pastor, leader, and just all around nice guy. Raleigh, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm always glad to be here, Andrew. You know that I love the team at Nexus, love the leadership. Always glad to hang out with everybody from Nexus. So appreciate it, Andrew. Thanks.
Awesome. Also joining Raleigh is not Bill Shulkowski. Bill was placed on the injured reserve last night, along with my entire fantasy football team. No, just kidding. But with us is also Tom Vick. Tom, thank you so much for being here, man. Why don't you give us a brief intro of who you are and kind of your role at TSF?
You bet. Well, I'm a construction manager here at the Solomon Foundation. I've been here for 5 years now. It'll be 5 years in January. My entire career has been in construction. I worked in the electrical field for the majority of my career. Started out as an electrician, started my own company in 1993 and grew that and did that for about 26 years. I still am somewhat involved, but on the side with that business, but my primary job is with the Solomon Foundation, working with churches, helping them with their construction projects, their renovations, and the whole nine yards. So I've enjoyed my time here at Solomon Foundation immensely, working with churches. Very rewarding. Love what I do and love working with Raleigh.
Awesome. 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 Well, for those of you that don't know, the Solomon Foundation is a nonprofit financial organization that connects with like Christian churches and churches of Christ and helps advance their mission as they continue to grow and move into buildings. But their mission is to provide profitable investment opportunities to individuals, congregations, or parachurch organizations and turn them into innovative loans for growing churches and ultimately providing an avenue for greater ministry and expanded impact. And so as we start this conversation, we're talking about doing that in a very creative way of sharing space with organizations or businesses or whatever it might be. And so also with us is my kind of co-host, and we'll take it from here, Mr. Greg Garcia, pastor down in Needville, Texas, who is dressed super fine this morning. So Greg, say hi.
All right. Well, yes, I know I'm overdressed, but, you know, we're all pastors here, so I've got to do a funeral at 2:00. And so I at least I don't have the tie on yet, but it's all good. All right. So we are talking about building and building use. And one of the reasons why this became pretty apparent that we need to do something is because several of you have just recently either purchased a building or you are now seriously looking at purchasing some land and or some buildings. And so it always comes up, hey, what do we do? How do we make the offer? What are we looking at when we renovate something, or if we have to build from ground up, what do we do? Some of you know my story here at Creekside when we planted 17 years ago. We are in Needville, Texas, town of about 2,900 people. Back then it was about 2,500 people. So we've grown in the last 17 years by a couple of hundred, but we were in a position where we had to build from ground up right away. So if you hear some noise in the background, that's because we have a preschool and we're going to be talking about building use. So I figured I'd just be here at the church and let you kind of hear and see all of what goes on with a very multi-purpose type facility. So we have built, I would say two and a half buildings. We built our first facility, our second facility, and then we added on to our first facility. But I would listen, we have not rehearsed any of this, but I'm going to come back to Tom and just say, Tom, in your experience right now, I know that with Solomon Foundation, you primarily prefer to take a big box like a Walmart that's gone out of business, or an old Kmart that's gone out of business, et cetera, et cetera. And you like to purchase those kind of facilities and renovate them. So what would be some of the typical or average type pros and cons that y'all see in the renovation of a big box?
Yeah, we prefer that mainly because it's beneficial to the church in many scenarios. So starting with the site, typically a big box store is going to be in a great location, on a main street, lots of visibility, parking's already there. And then the benefit of renovating versus building ground up is twofold. One, it's going to take half the time or less to get that renovated and in the building. And two, it's going to cost less overall, typically, than a ground up. When you talk about per square foot costs. So yes, it's a great model. Obviously, not everybody has the luxury of having big box stores to choose from. Like yourself, you probably didn't have that option. You're in a smaller community, so you felt like ground up was probably your only option. And so, we definitely want to look at what's available for you and work with that. But yeah, there are definite advantages to big box renovations.
So in the big box renovation, I've walked through a lot of these things, seen what some of the guys have done. What would you say maybe are three landmines that would be the common mistakes that guys are falling into when they look at the big box?
Oh, wow. This is construction in general right now, but underestimating the total cost of getting in. That's a big one. And I've seen a lot of, or not a lot, but I've seen several churches get burned by cost-cutting contractors that will do things on the cheap for them. And sometimes it costs them more money, but a lot of times it costs them more time. And in many cases, that's even worse. Had churches that have, had deadlines to get out of a lease in the building and run into problems with getting in their building in time. So I guess the other thing would be the existing condition of the building. You got to really know what you're getting into. Roof issues, structural issues, water intrusion, asbestos, mold, things that you don't anticipate necessarily, but you got to do your homework and make sure those things don't bite you.
Hey, Greg, can I jump in on this just a quick little bit? One of the things I'd like to share with our guys, part of what's provided through Solomon is guys like Tom and Bill Shalkowski. And if I've heard it once, I've probably heard it three or four times. Man, I wish we'd have had these guys in early because, once again, most of us preachers have not been trained in the area of construction, building. Some of us are fortunate to have guys within the church, but even then it's pretty uncommon. And, those who've heard me do my top 10 list, one of my top 10 is what would a better leader do? And I think the earlier you can bring in someone with Tom's background, expertise, and the other thing that I see, Greg, is quite often we'll lay eyes on a building, and it reminds me of when the eyes I see when a guy lays eyes on the first car he's going to buy. Maybe this is an old illustration, but at least when I was in my late teens, you know, if I decided I wanted to buy the car, it's going to be hard for anybody to talk me out of it, even though it might not be the best car to buy. And, you know, if you get frustrated and you're thinking I'm never going to find a building, then pretty soon you lay eyes on a building, you think this is the one I got to have. You got to have someone like Tom come in and say, hey, take a look at this cost, this location, that kind of thing. And so my advice to the guys on the call is don't be afraid to reach out early and let's get Tom and Bill to lay eyes on it. Because quite often they can give you a lot of insight just by, you know, Google Earth type thing. So that would be my encouragement is, you know, once again, I just have a number of guys saying, and I wish I'd have had these guys earlier.
Yeah.
It helps to be involved pre-purchase. If there's a building being purchased, it helps to be involved pre-purchase to just to help guide through the process and advise.
Well, so through the Nexus Network right now, I don't even know if Nathan Bolt is on this, but Nathan recently purchased an old fitness facility. It got renovated, has a really nice lobby space, good worship center. He put in a nice, big, huge LED wall board, and now he's fixing to maybe make a second renovation to create more children's space, which is one of the common mistakes that we make in our build outs and or in our renovation if we're building an old box or buying an old box, which is we have to be very mindful of our children's space, because if we choke out our own children's space, then that's a big mistake that we've made, because now we're going to limit what we can have in our adult worship simply because we did not give our children enough space. So guys, make sure that you have plenty of space for your children's ministry so that it doesn't cramp what you can do in your adult space. Otherwise, you've just wasted space and you just might as well just swap spaces and give the kids more space and cram the adults into the smaller space. Two sayings that I usually say in my 17 years of coaching, and I know some of the guys, Andrew even refers to them as Gregisms, but one of them is this: you can't make small big, but you can make big small. So what I simply mean by that is this: sometimes we want to build a education wing because we want space for our children's ministry, and so we build a whole bunch of small little 10 by 10 rooms. And I'm simply going to say, guys, think that through, because once you make that 10 by 10 room, you cannot make that big again. It's a wall. So you might be better off doing some air walls, not those old fashioned air walls, but just putting up some partitions, in other words, that you can immediately put away so that you can maintain a 2,000 or 3,000 square foot space to be able to do something else with it. Because again, what we're trying to talk about today is the multiple use of a facility as well. And I know that's one of the things that Raleigh wanted to hit on today was keeping a building multifunctional. So one of the other things that you may not know about my facilities here at Creekside is that I don't have office space. So right now I'm talking to you from my front lobby. This is my office. And wherever I can find a white table and set up my computer is where my office is for the day, because I've seen enough guys over the years make office suites. And then they are within a year, as the church grows, they are reworking that and making it into more children's space because they did not make enough children's space. So we don't have offices here. So Tom, I'm going to come back to you again. And I'm going to say, what would be a standard square footage to maybe have a worship facility to seat 300 adults? What kind of square footage does a guy need to look for?
In the sanctuary alone?
Yes, sir.
Three hundred would probably be around a 5,000 square foot sanctuary.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So the reason why
depends on the size of the stage, and you've got a you know, an AV booth and things like that that fit in there as well. So a lot depends on that, but yeah.
All right. So roughly a ballpark is, you said what, 5,000 square feet?
5,000.
Okay. So guys, that gives you an idea. So if you want to be able to seat 300, you're going to have at least 5,000 square feet of building space. That does not include children's ministry yet. So that kind of gives you a starting point and an idea of what kind of a size facility you're going to be looking at to be able to accommodate your church. And the reason why I picked 300 is because, again, in our current world, a full building is about 70% in COVID. It might even be a little bit less. So that means if you are able to seat 300 in one shot, you're really kind of looking at about 200 adults in a facility at one time. So so that gives you an idea to seat 200 adults. You need seating for 300. You need 5,000 square feet of space. I hope that's helping some of you guys get some base work, some groundwork done. Andrew, have there been any questions yet that have popped up?
Nothing yet.
Okay. We want to encourage you guys to ask questions. So please start asking questions. Andrew will field those for us. In the meantime, let me tell you about the multiple use of space. I'm going to maybe take you on a quick little walk, if I can do this without getting you guys sick. This is our lobby right here, and I'm going to walk you into our doors, into our worship center. So what you see in here right now is only about 100 seats out or so. The whole entire thing would be full of seats, of course, on a Sunday morning. But the view right in front of me, all those chairs have been picked up. And that's because during the week, we then have baton twirling in here for the community. Beyond those chairs, towards that other big window over there, you'll see a brown barn door. And that's because it is a barn door. So we will shut that barn door down. And then in the area beyond that, we are able to have wedding showers, baby showers, and all kinds of things in that lakeside lobby. There's a fireplace back there, and it's kind of like an old-fashioned fireplace room, but it's just, we call it the lakeside lobby. But those chairs that you see stacked in their racks, you hear a bunch of noise back there, and that's because that's the preschool. So the preschool consumes all of that area, as well as you'll see an exit door on the far left, and back over there is about three or four more classrooms for the preschool. Then during the week, they will break that down halfway for our youth group that will come in on Wednesday. They will then break it down again halfway on Thursday for us to have our Thursday evening worship service. When you look at the stage, I don't know how close I can get to that, but on the very bottom of that stage, underneath that stair, you might see a wheel. And that's because this whole entire stage is on wheels. You'll see two wheels right there at least. And then you see that black cavernous abyss back there. This whole entire stage will get wheeled back into that area. We have a winch and we just simply pull it back. And then this whole entire area is wide open. We then are able to host the eighth grade graduation dance for our community. We also are able to host the high school graduation pro-grad all night party right after graduation. And then we are also able to host the daddy-daughter dance for our small community and anything else that we want to do in here. Also in our front lobby then, every Sunday, trying to do this slowly so you don't get sick. In our front lobby, we will also host Alcoholics Anonymous. And then that glass door beyond our glass door is also our counseling center. So we put that space aside, and we actually have a counseling center with three counselors on our team. And then you'll see this other building. That was the addition. So that's a 3,000 square foot addition beyond those trees right there. Now, one of the things that I would encourage you to do is this. We have another 3,000 square foot addition on the other side. To be quite honest with you, we didn't need it at the time. However, we built it, even though we didn't necessarily need it, because we figured it would be more advantageous for us to build it now instead of trying to build it again later. because the cost of building materials constantly go up. So we actually built 3,000 square feet of space and we didn't even need it at the time. We then leased it out to Springer Gymnastics. So they're a gymnastic company. They use it. They do a ninja in there for about 100 kids. And so between the gymnastic company, the preschool, it's we call it partner ministries. And we all kind of operate as one big church and one member leadership ministry team, I should say. The director of both entities come to our meetings. They come to our staff meetings. They come to our retreats. They are treated as if they are staff members without receiving a paycheck from us. And so we are constantly working on calendars together and communicating together on all things related to our building facilities, broken sinks, broken toilets, air conditioning units, heating units, whatever. It's constant communication as to what's going on. But we have about four or five different ministry groups that are constantly in our facilities. And that's because we've held to the concept of keeping things large and not breaking things down into small 8x10 rooms or having offices or any of that kind of stuff. So we've got about 33,000, 34,000 square feet of space here that is all pretty much wide open except for five classrooms, and that's it. So when you guys think about these things, you know, how best can you serve your community with the facility that you renovate or the facility that you're about to build from ground up is going to be some of your best things to think about. So one of the other things that I talk about in our coaching is build the biggest thing that they'll put you in debt for. Now, I know that sounds absolutely ridiculous, but I'm going to kick this over to Raleigh at this point in time. And Raleigh, we know that Solomon has been a partner with Nexus for a long time. In all fairness, I will say that we also have guys working with CFR, and we also have guys working with CDF. But Solomon is a pretty big partner here with Nexus. How does the loan process work? How did guys approach you to start working on a loan to either purchase a box or build or buy land and build from ground up? Can you kind of walk the guys through that?
All right. Yeah, thanks, Greg. You know, once again, I'm going to circle back. Actually, my wife says I can't say circle back because apparently the lady at the White House, that's what she uses all the time, and people are mocking her for that. So I want to remind you of what I shared about Tom and Bill. You know, we encourage people to get them plugged in early. Same thing would be true in the pre-qualification process. You know, and if you're interested in pre-qualifying, you let me know, because what happens is once you get a property, if you're already pre-qualified, then you can make an offer on that and let them know, hey, this is contingent upon, you know, us getting the financing, but we are pre-qualified. And then what we do at Solomon is we will send a letter to either your realtor or whoever your banker needs it, saying they're pre-qualified, and you'll get that within 48 hours. So the best way to do this is to get pre-qualified. And, you know, we'll ask you for 4 years of your finances. We'll take a look at the number of baptisms. Is your attendance going up and to the right? How much money do you have in savings? But Tom will share with you as well. I think one of the things that causes us to stand out is we invest heavily in the leadership. And so if we believe in the leadership, one of our thoughts is we go with the goers. And if we have confidence that you're going to be able to take this church to the next level, once again, this is what I think separates Solomon from other groups, is we're willing to take a risk on some of that. And, you know, I don't want to break confidence, but I know there's different people that we've worked with through Nexus that, you know, one of different groups have said, okay, you raise 40% of what this loan's going to be, and we'll loan you 60%. Kind of like, once again, what Tom was saying, part of the reason we like the big box, same thing is true with a loan, is we want to get you into a new facility as quickly as we possibly can, because we know that if you're in a facility that's going to accommodate growth, then you're going to expand the kingdom. And so quite often you pre-qualify and you let us know what the cost of the loan is going to be. Quite often we'll loan you everything you need to get into that building, and then you can start ministry. But to answer your question, Greg, the best thing you can do is get pre-qualified, and then we take it from there. But we'll guide you every step of the way on that.
You're muted, Greg.
Sorry, trying to always keep that children's noise out of the way of this.
Yeah.
I know that we got Nathan Bolt into a building, I think within a year of his church plant. So I know that you said, you know, we want to see 4 years, but I know that you can make some arrangements to help some guys maybe get in a little bit sooner. I know Jesse right now, also in the Nexus Network, he's in Blanchard, Oklahoma. He just got into a new facility. Well, he's in the process of doing this new facility. It's an old bowling alley, so he's renovating that.
Let's see,
I don't know if you're in on that project.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's that?
My internet is going in and out. Sorry. Let's see.
Okay. So anyway, we have some other guys, and I would love to get you connected to those guys if you don't have their numbers. That way you can talk to them and talk to them about how their renovation has gone, because they both renovated a facility. Tom, can you tell us a little bit about Jesse's project right now? Is it what have been some of the difficulties there, and or what do you see as some of the successes that are going on with that renovation?
Well, right now it's in the design stage, so that they're not very far along. There's been no work done yet. We got Jesse tied up with a design builder, and they're currently designing the project and going through the permit process. So I don't know. I haven't spoken with them recently in the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. So I don't know where that stands as far as when they expect to break ground. I know they were hoping to before the end of the year. But I don't know exactly where that stands. But I will say that one of the things I did want to mention that I forgot to mention when you were talking about snags that churches run into is contractor selection. I've run into probably the majority of the problems that I've been involved with has been when they don't make a careful selection of their contractor. So we like to play a part in that to help guide them, not necessarily to point them where to go or who to use, but to help discern them with that selection process.
Good.
A great guy. I might mention too, you know, you were mentioning about the different individuals. I think the project with David Lemagne is a really good example of what Stan is able to do.
Right.
You know, that was a sealed bid process. And obviously with a sealed bid, you want to come in high enough to get the bid, but you don't want to be so high that, you know, you look kind of silly to everybody in the community. And what Solomon was able to do, and everybody involved understood this, is we, you know, first of all, David Lemagne and his leadership wrote a really nice letter to the sellers. It was a Jewish synagogue. But then the second part of it was we came in and we made a cash offer where Solomon bought the building, wasn't contingent upon financing. And then we literally turn right around and sell the building to Epic Christian Church. So the sellers knew that this was not going to be contingent upon financing. We were making a cash offer. And so once again, we're able to take a look at every situation, their uniqueness. And then, you know, if we get Greg and Tom involved early, then we can kind of guide everybody through it.
I have a question. As you guys are looking at moving into building spaces, whether it's a new renovation or just starting from scratch, I mean, Greg has already mentioned that he's got multiple different types of organizations that are using it, whether it's a preschool or like a baton class or all sorts of different things, AA classes. I mean, obviously, it's very multi-use. Do you guys see churches moving into a space intentionally to partner with another organization just to bring down costs? Or like, are there partnerships? Like, so if it is a preschool, like say, hey, we're going to move into this building together to do this, or is it more of a church owned thing that's just a blank slate, and then whoever is able to come in and use the space is usable?
At least in my experience, it's been a church owned enterprise that creates the multi-use space, whether it be a lease situation or the church actually runs, you know, say the preschool, or we've seen a lot of different types of things like youth activities. You know, schools are big, obviously, not just preschools, but even when they get into the elementary education and things like that. I think figuring out how to serve the community that they're in, you know, I think that they work out a lot better when they treat it like, how can we serve our community, or what needs exist in our community, rather than, you know, how can we produce a second income? Because if they create the need, or if they find the need and fill the need, that will create the income. But the different communities have different needs. And I've seen it from, like I said, sports programs for youth to daycares to some just sublease situations to nonprofit type businesses. So there's all kinds of things that we've seen out there.
Matt Branham is one of our coaches for Nexus, and he is up in Spearfish, South Dakota. They also have a preschool situation, but theirs is also privately owned by the director. So there's definitely some pros and cons to when you partner with other entities within the community. Our preschool here is privately owned by the director, and the gymnastic company is privately owned by the director. And for me, that was preferable. And here's why: because I don't want to have the hassle of hiring teachers, firing teachers, and the kind of revolving door that happens with preschool teachers. That was a headache that I did not want, nor did I want to have the extra headache of the licensing, all paperwork that goes with it, as well as the insurance and everything else. So we stayed away from it, and basically invited them to come join us as long as they privately owned it and ran it and operated it. Same thing also with the gymnastic group. Same thing also with the counseling center. They are not on our payroll. They are a private counseling entity, but we have given everybody permission to take our names. So we've signed off on all that paperwork. So it's Creekside Christian Academy. And it's Creekside Christian Counseling Center, but we are not the owners of it. And what we simply do is we ask them to tithe to our church. So there's not even a lease that's going on there. So one of them pays us $3,000 a month. One of them pays us $1,500 a month. And the counseling center pays us pretty much on a sliding scale as to how many clients they saw in that particular month. So right now we have about $5,000 a month of income. And that goes a long way in any economy. It allows us to be able to make repairs. It allows us to be able to hire a maintenance person through that kind of monthly income. We can maintain all of our air conditioning units, et cetera, et cetera. So And then that never hits our actual operating budget. So there's a lot of, again, pros and cons to it. I know that Nathan Bolts in his new facility is also partnering with a counseling center. And I think he is also doing some gymnastics as well. So some of the guys that are out there that are getting in facilities are following in the same kind of pattern because it's just good partnering with the community. And you have a constant flow of people into your brand new facility. You also immediately just go up in stock as far as how your civic leaders see you and see your church as well in your community. Now, we've also hosted meetings. The thing you have to be careful about when you host town hall meetings, guys, in your new facilities, is that if you're gonna, you can't have just one party. You can't have just a Democratic or just a Republican town hall. You have to invite both parties, or all parties, I should say, to that town hall, or at least extend an invitation. But again, I never do those things. The community calls us, and we simply say yes, as long as we know that all parties have been invited. So just a little tidbit of information right there you guys need to be aware of. So yes, there's pros and cons to doing it on your own and or partnering with the other entities that already exist and just invite them into your facility.
I have a question. Is there any tax implications when you're looking at leasing facilities?
I don't, Raleigh, is that something maybe that you can cover? Because again, ours is done by an offering base.
Tom and I visited about this earlier. The one thing that I would recommend, Andrew, is each area has, you know, like I think South Dakota is more friendly towards religious groups. You might not find quite the same friendliness in other areas. So it's worth checking into. I didn't know if, Greg, if you had any, if it affected your tax exempt status there at all for doing anything like that?
No, it hasn't. It's simply because, again, we don't have a lease. We don't even have a signed lease. We have not asked for a certain dollar amount. We just simply say, hey, give us a tithe off your income, or pick a number and just give it to us on a monthly basis. It's a completely gift-based dollar amount that we receive.
Gotcha.
So it's not like we sat down and said, you're going to actually lease our facility for this dollar amount. We haven't done anything like that.
Okay. Is that gotcha. A workaround, Greg? Would you, if you had a signed lease and a set fee, would it change things?
Sure would. Yeah. Because then we are going to be liable for all that kind of stuff. And we just don't want any of that kind of, we don't want any of that.
Yeah. 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 I know that, obviously all the states do things differently. And I will say in Florida, we're working with a church right now that's putting in preschools and some elementary education. And the state of Florida uses like a voucher system. So they basically, the state of Florida pays for the kids to go to school there. So the income comes to the church for running that school. And that's one way to, again, all states are not the same. So I don't know what it's like in other states, but the church is really taking advantage of that program there in Florida. And that's one thing you can look at when you're trying to figure out what you're going to do is what makes the most sense. What needs do you have in your community? Like I said.
Yeah. I'll tell you about another one of our guys, Clint. Clint is in Arkansas. He's in Brooklyn, Arkansas, and he is leasing a facility, but he had to build and renovate that lease facility, and it has gone well for him as well. I would say that when listen, buildings are not everything. We already know all of that, but this is a topic about buildings and build outs and all that kind of stuff. So since we're on that topic, it has been stated, and I've heard Doug Crozier at Solomon talk about this before as well, but there could be anywhere from a 20 to 50% increase in attendance when you finish a facility. Is that right, Tom?
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen that a lot, actually.
Right. There's still an element, and predominantly where Nexus is in our presence of where we do church plants, there's still this idea that the church is the building. And so, listen, don't write me an email about that, but we can debate that forever and always. The point is, we know that that's not the case. We know that the church is not the building. But people, they have a perception that, oh, where's your church? In other words, where's your church building? And I know for us, we grew to 100 for 2 years. But as soon as we built our first facility, we immediately doubled. And it was just, you know, it's frustrating. It's mind blowing. And you think, come on, what, you know, you could have joined us in the elementary school or the junior highs where we were meeting. But people just seem to have this idea is that you're not real until you have that facility. Tom or Raleigh, you guys want to talk about that at all?
Well, one thing I'll say about that is that I think you're able to serve your community better with your own building. If you're in a school, you're restricted typically just to Sunday use. You can have Sunday services. When you have your own building, you're able to serve the community, have Bible studies, have weekday services, use it for multiple types of gatherings, and especially like your facility, Greg, you have it set up where it's very multi-use, where you can do a lot of things, right? You said you do some showers and lots of things like that. So, and I think anytime you can get, especially youth, but anytime you can get your community into your building, their comfort level grows, right? They get around the Christian people and that they see that they're normal people, and hey, I like those people. Maybe we should try that church. I think anytime you can get them to come in and experience your facility and have a positive activity, then it's going to benefit the church as well.
Yeah, I read a long time ago in some of my research that a lot of people will drive into your parking lot if they don't see cars that are similar to theirs, or they don't see people dressed similar to the way they're dressed. They will either park their car and get out and join because they feel like it's them, or they're going to get in their car and just drive away and say, this is not for us. But one of the things that I also learned in that same research was that the more you can get people onto your campus, like you were talking about, Tom, so one of the fears of the visitor is they don't know where to go. They don't know where to take their kids. They don't know where the bathroom is. They don't know where to get coffee. But the more you have people into your facility for other extended use type things, then they know where the bathrooms are and they know where the coffee is and they know the lay of the land and the facility itself. And so showing up on a Sunday morning is now no big deal. The fear is gone because they can just show up and have a good time. So again, it's all those things about the ins and outs of how do you use a facility once you get into that facility and make it beneficial to all the things that you do. So Andrew, are there any questions out there yet?
Not other than those. No, not yet. Okay.
All right. So let's talk about that one phrase that I said. Let me kind of unpack that a little bit more. And Raleigh, maybe you can help me unpack that one. But one of the things that I've always told guys is build the biggest thing that they'll put you in debt for. And I know that at times people want to give me some flack for that. But I kind of look at it as saying, listen, this is not my risk. This is the bank's risk. And if the bank says I'm good for $2 million, then I'm not going to build a building for 1.5 and save 500,000 because my debt will be lower. I look at it as I'm going to build $2 million because they're going to give me $2 million, and I'm going to use every square inch I can to then serve my community. And in the process, if I'm able to get like a gymnastic company, or if I'm able to get a preschool or any other kind of entity that's going to pay up to $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a month, then the payment is nothing. The payment is no longer my concern. But what would you say about my phrase, build the biggest thing that they'll put you in debt for?
You know, I once again, what I share with the guys is, you know, you measure twice, cut once. So you have that side of the equation. But the other side is exactly what you're talking about, Greg. And that's one of the things I do appreciate about Doug Crozier and our team is Bill, Tom, Doug, none of us want you to build too small, because what happens is you build a building too small, you fill it up, and you still got to make the payments on it. And then you have to go back to the congregation and say, hey, you know, I told you we were going to borrow $1 million, but I was just kidding. We're going to now have to borrow another $1 million, when in reality, you probably could have got that loan to you at the very beginning. And so I think one of the dangers we have is, one, we build too small, and two, we don't build with the future in mind. And once again, going back to what you said earlier, Greg, you don't want to build a bunch of walls that, you know, can accommodate a 10-foot by 10-foot room. You want to dream big on what this is going to look like. And kind of on the humorous side, we've got an investor that he sells farm equipment and grain storage units. And so he will tell a farmer, I'm not going to put up a grain bin until you tell me where the next one's going to go. And he jokingly says he's got a farmer in Lamar, Missouri, that's put up 10 last grain bins. He always says, this is my last one. This is my last one. And then they build another one. And his point is the farmer just doesn't have enough vision of, one, how much crop he can grow, two, how much the land is going to produce. So he's always putting up another grain bin, even though he said this is going to be my last one. So we want to make sure that you do not build too small. And I do think that we're still in a place where that window is there, at least in my region, that if you have a building, it sends a message to the community that you're real, you're stable. Now that window may close in another 5 to 10 years. I mean, none of us can predict what's going to happen. But I do think there's still a mentality, especially in the Midwest. You know, if you've got a building, people think you're legitimate. And, you know, just the other day, I was driving out of Omaha. My wife and I flew back from ICOM, and we came out Center Street, which we don't normally do. And there's Life Church has built a building right on Center Street and Highway 6 that goes down into Gretna. So even though they're not, don't have a live presence, quote unquote, in the community, they've got a building that they've built because they know the value of having that.
Yeah. You know, again, on the topic of the building is not the church. Again, we get that. We know that. But, you know, March 15th of last year, nobody could have imagined or fathomed this thing called COVID. And yet within a week, you know, almost all of our guys were kicked out of their facilities. And yet if we had had facilities for everybody, it wouldn't have mattered. Because as soon as our government entities gave us the clear to come back, we all could have come back. Instead, we were, you know, trying like crazy to find a place that would take us back in. And so it was a tough time. I think the thing we need to keep in mind is, you know, who knows where COVID's going, and who knows what might be next. Our world is definitely different in so many different ways. But I know that you have helped, some of our guys get into some buildings a little bit sooner than what most other entities would allow. And so I think that's one of the things that I appreciate about Solomon. I have told some people that my loan is with Doug Crozier, not necessarily whatever the name of the organization is that he is serving at the time. My loan is with Doug. So let me transition to another idea. And it's something I think we've talked about on some little short video venues that we've done with Andrew. Sometimes we have risk to plant the church. And what does George Johnson from the Northwest say, who is the director of CEA? He says something like 1 in 10 guys, 10% of all pastors have the ability to plant a church from scratch. And so we know that we're talking about Nexus, and we're talking to a bunch of church planters. We know that we are already in a small pool of guys that have the ability to pull off what a lot of guys would never even think about doing. So we are risk takers by nature. But something happens to us that all of a sudden we have enough risk to start a church from scratch, and we have that vision to get it going. But then some of us begin to freeze up, and we don't take the next risk to buy land, or we don't take the next risk to build that building. And I want to just encourage you guys and challenge you guys, take the next risk. Solomon Foundation is one of the entities that will work with you in taking that next risk, but at least investigate it. At least, as Raleigh was saying earlier, kick the tires around and let's just see if we can get you in to that land or get you into that property. Raleigh, I'm going to come back to you again. Can you talk a little bit more about what you were saying about we invest in the leader?
Yeah. And that's one of the things I was going to share also, Greg, is I think part of what happens with those of us who are risk takers is we get to a point where we're now taking a risk into areas where we really are very unfamiliar. And at the risk of sounding like a broken record, that's why I'm always asking the question, what would a better leader do? And so you bring in a Doug Crozier, you bring in a Tom Vick, and they can take a look at, Tom can take a look at the property. And one of the things you're going to hear Tom, Bill say all the time is, what is your all-in cost? Now, a lot of times your contractor will say it's going to be X amount of dollars per square foot. Oh, you also want to have a parking lot? Oh, that's extra. You want to have a fire system? Oh, that's extra. So Tom can take a look at that and tell you this is the all-in cost. And when you have a better leader, they can help you continue to dream big, and they can come alongside of you and say, you know what, this is a risk, but you're not taking this risk alone. Solomon's going to be right there with you. And going back to what you said, Greg, I know a lot of groups talk about it, but one thing I appreciate working with Solomon is, you know, we would crawl across broken glass before we would let one of our preachers fail. And so we like to do our homework ahead of time. We'll let you know if your risk is moderate, high risk. We've got a formula in place for that. Like I said, Tom can put his eyes on a building and location. He can let you know pretty quickly if this is a good idea or not. And so one of the ways for you and me to continue to dream big and to risk big is we got to have fellow risk takers that understand a different area of ministry than we do to say, you know what? Yeah, you are crazy, but we're in this together. You're crazy to plant the church and you're crazy to do this, but we like your craziness and we're going to be there with you.
Yeah. So Tom, let's come back to you for a second. And so let's say that a guy finds some land or finds that box and he goes to Raleigh and or whatever the rep is for the Solomon area for his region from Solomon. And they start working on the finances. Once everything is approved, then I'm assuming it gets kicked over to you and you start looking at the project itself and the renovation and the cost and everything else. First of all, A, is that true? And then B, then what is your role from there? And how do you guys help the planter get that building renovated or built from ground up?
Well, we like to do a parallel track, actually. So while the church is working with the loan department, you know, trying to get pre-approved, figuring out how much they can borrow, and all that, getting all their finances and attendance and everything to us that we need. I like to work with them, you know, whether they've identified a building or not, just to find out what their needs are. What are they looking for? And what's their community like? And where do they want to be? A lot of times they're coming to us, they've already found a building that they want. so we can help them assess that building, see if it's really right for them. I like to use examples. So, you know, recently we had we've been working with this Hispanic church up in Spokane. Raleigh knows that's one of Raleigh's, and you know, they've this is a second building we looked at. It was a great property, 10 acres, and it was an existing church, and it had three small buildings on it. But their church attendance was already, the sanctuary building was already too small for them. So it was going to stymie their growth until they could build. And to do a ground up build, they had enough property, but they were probably looking at 2 years or more after they acquired the building to get there, to get something built and get into it. So that meant that, you know, they're going to be stuffed into a facility that's too small, not enough room for their kids for 2 to 3 years. And that was really a problem. And they recognized that. We all talked about it. And in the end, they chose not to go through with that purchase because of that. So they're on to looking for the next one. So, you know, we kind of help them assess the whole thing. But again, we like to be involved early. When I say we, the construction department, Bill and I, like to be involved early in that process, helping them make decisions. I'm a construction manager, but I feel like the most important part of our job for Bill and I is the pre-construction piece. That's where the wrong decisions and the right decisions are made. Once construction starts, I feel like you're on the downhill. That's the easy part. It's the pre-construction piece. It's the building selection, those kinds of things, I think, that are more important than the construction management itself.
Thank you. Hey, let me kind of wrap this up a little bit. I think we're getting close to the hour. Let me just talk to you guys here for a second, all of our church planners. One of the things that I will coach a guy on is this: you need to know what you're called to. All right. That I know we use the word call a lot in a calling. You've already been called to ministry, so we can kind of check that off the list. We know you've been called to church planting. We can check that off the list. We know you've been called to your specific community, so we can check that off the list. What you're going to have to wrestle in the tension, okay? I call it wrestling with the tension, is that you need to know what God called you to actually plant. So in other words, this, are you a sending church, or do you intend to reach your entire community? There's nothing wrong with either way. You just need to know what God has really placed in your heart. The tension that all of us have is that you go to any conference throughout the history of Christian ministry, and most everybody immediately says, hey, how big is your church? Stupid question. We know, but that's what we almost always say to each other is, well, how many people are going to your church? The thing that I just want to know as a coach is, what's your 20-year plan? What's your 20-year dream? If you're a sending church and you just need one building, great. Let's get you into that building. Let's get the right one building that you need. If you say that you want to reach your entire community, so let's just throw down some numbers, right? If you're in a town of 100,000 people and you want to reach your entire community, and all of your ministries are going to be designed around reaching 100,000 people, if you were to reach 1%, that's a church of 1,000. So you don't need to apologize for that. You need a plan for that. All right. You shouldn't be sheepish about that. You need to be aggressive about that. It's about risk. It's about strategy. It's about working the plan and working what God has placed in your heart. So don't apologize for it, and don't put your head down about it. It's a matter of working towards it. So for me, again, I'm a very strategic kind of guy, and I usually will run those kind of numbers. But again, you want to be a church all in for 100,000 people, then you have the potential to be a church of 1,000. You better start planning for it, and you better build the right building for it. And so again, Solomon Foundation is a good partner to help you and get there. Nexus, we are your church planting group and your partner. So we're going to work with you on that as well. We want to make sure that both of us together, Nexus and Solomon, that you do not fail in this mission that God has given you. You are called to do this, guys. Do it well. Do it with passion. And see that dream come true is what I would tell you.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much, Tom, Raleigh, for taking a few minutes for us to just share some of your wisdom. We appreciate you guys taking some time out of your day. Thank you guys. Have a great rest of your afternoon. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
See you guys.